This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parashas Mishpatim, which of course begins Ve'ila Mishpatim, these are the laws, and in his opening comment on the Parsha, Rashi points out that the correct location of the Sanhedrin is in the Beis HaMikdash, in the particular room in which they met, known as the Lishkas HaGazis, during the period of Bayis Sheni was divided into two halves. One half had Kedushas HaAzara, the other half only had the Kedusha of HaRabayis. There is a famous Gemara which highlights that Ein Yeshiva BaAzara LaLamachus Beis David Bovad, that no one's allowed to sit in the Azara, and so therefore, even the members of the Sanhedrin and the Lishkas HaGazis had to sit only in the half of the room which didn't have a Kedushas HaAzara. Now, Mori B'Rabbi Rav Shechter Shlita would regularly quote the Netziv, who noted that towards the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Aron was Nignaz, the Aron was hidden in order to give the Sanhedrin a chance to practice Psak without the heavy overt presence of their proximity to the Luchos. In other words, normally, Rashi points out, there is supposed to be a proximity between the Sanhedrin and the Aron HaKodesh, and the giving of the Torah, that there should be a perceived direct connection. But already at the end of Bayis Rishon, the Netziv says that this was done, this Geniza Sa'aron, was to give the Sanhedrin a chance to realize that the heavy overt presence of the Luchos was going to be missing, and still Sanhedrin was going to need to function leading Am Yisrael. Rav Shechter would add that even after this major change, our ability to rely on the psak of a human being is still based on the assumption of Sod Hashem Li Re'av, that Hashem has a means of communication when we don't know one way or another, and we turn to a Talmud Chacham, who is a Yari Shamayim, we have to assume that he had divine assistance to paskin properly. So when the Sanhedrin sat in their office near the Aron with the Luchos, we assume that they had an even stronger degree of Siyata Dishmaya, not to err. Whether during the earlier years of the first Beis HaMikdash when the Aron was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or during the period of Bayis Sheni when the Aron was in some sort of designed vault, or even nowadays when Rabbanim are nowhere near the Aron HaKodesh, the obligation to assume the Psak of a Rav is not an error is based on the supernatural assumption that the Rav is given a divine assistance, not to err. Rav Shechter has pointed this out to us, that if he is Doma L'malach Hashem Tzavakos, like the Gemara says in Chagiga, then we have a right to go ahead and ask him to offer a Psak Halacha. But if he doesn't have that influence, if he's not Doma L'malach Hashem Tzavakos, then Ayivak Shetorah Mipil, then we don't have a right to seek divine assistance from him. And so suggests Rav Shechter the importance of choosing a Rav who's Doma L'malach Hashem, who's a Kli Mekabel, who has the lack of gaiva, to be able to step up to the plate. The Torah continues, Kisikna Evet Ivri, when you purchase an Evet Ivri, and Rav Asher Weiss Shalita spoke to us a number of years ago and noted that the proximity of the story of Nasa Ben Ishma in this week's Parsha to the life and law of Evet Ivri is not haphazard. He pointed out to us that there's a famous comment of the Leif Simcha, the Ger Rebbe, once told his Hasidim that if when they recite the Halal, they have the greatest Kavanah, when they say Ana Hashem, it could do amazing things. And so the Hasidim began a whole debate. Did the Rebbe mean if they had a Kavanah with Ana Hashem Oshiana, or did the Rebbe mean Ana Hashem Hatzlichana? And then when they asked the Rebbe explained, no, it's not Ana Hashem Oshiana, it's not Ana Hashem Hatzlichana, it's Ana Hashem, Ki Ani Avdecha. And Rav Asher added that the first two Ana Hashem examples begin with a pleading. Ana Hashem. Ana over there is Aleph Nun Aleph. The one of Ana Hashem, Ki Ani Avdecha is also Ana, but there it ends with a Hey. Ana Hashem is a statement of Hakaras HaTov. When one says that particular Ana Hashem, Ki Ani Avdecha, when we thank Hashem for making us his servants, so then we have the ability to recognize the single most important thing in our lives, that we have the connection to that gives meaning to everything in our lives, and that will inspire us and inspire others as well. This was achieved at the time of Mamad Har Sinai. We became Avdei Hashem, Na'aseh B'Nishma, and we were finally free of all of our other burdens. We continue with our discussion of slavery, so the Torah tells us in regard to the person who sells his daughter, she doesn't leave the way that servants do. And Ramban explains that this means that if he dislocates her eye or tooth, she might not go free, but he has to pay for the damage. So Rav Volbi Zatzal quoted, and he said, look, I remember noting a famous American book, Uncle Tom's Cabin. It was written by Harriet Beecher Stowe, who said that in the old slavery movement, the slaves, male and female, were there to allow one to do with them as the master wanted. Says Rav Volbi, there you can look at the contrast. This was not the case with the Jewish concept of slavery. The Jewish slave, the Eved Ivri, is entitled to some sort of workfare program, wherein the owner needed to care not only for the Eved, but also for his family, and he had to pay work-related injury fees. And even in the Eved Kanani, the Eved Kanani is given certain Torah-based rights, wherein a person is not allowed to just go ahead and damage him. And if he does damage him, b'shein or b'ayin, he's entitled to his freedom. Everything has a cost when you're dealing with an Eved Ivri and an Eved Kanani. Our system, our Torah system, is not debased and devaluing of the sanctity of the other of humanity as a whole. Quite the opposite. We have a responsibility to maintain and uphold humanity. The Torah tells us when a person kills somebody on purpose, me'im mizbechi, even from my mizbeach, tikachenu lomos, you have to give him the death penalty. Ibn Ezra notes the stark contrast to the shogeg, the person who kills by accident. Because when we deal with a shogeg, there's a potential for the individual to go to Ir Miklat. Here, the mezed, even the kedushas hamizbeach, the most holiest of places, doesn't protect him. And why is that? So Rabbeinu Bachai explains that the rule needs to be this way because it's the will of Hashem. Demonstrating Rachmanas, when the law is to encourage death, or the death penalty, that's achzarius in the world. And Chasam Sofer adds that the one who committed murder and hangs out on top of the Mizbeach is in the wrong place. It's kind of obvious. The Mizbeach's job is to extend life. And this individual is Mekanzer. He took a life willingly. He cut one off. That which extends life can't protect he who goes ahead and cuts off life, similar to the process of Lo Sanif Alea Barzel, which was the end of last week's Parsha. And so therefore, Me'im is Bechiti Kachenu Lamos. He should be taken to die, even from my Mizbeach. Rabbi Yamin Eisenberger Shalita, the great Rav in Brooklyn, used this idea to explain why it happens that people who engage in no Sugulos for Arichas Yamin do not always achieve it. And why is that? Says Rabbi Eisenberger, the answer is that one cannot have the long life if he or she is still attached to things that cut off life. Engaging in behaviors that cut life short and asking for arichas yamim is a contradiction, and so it's not a surprise that such contradictions don't work in our lives. We have to be a little bit careful about that situation. Torah also adds in later in the parasha, ki sireh, Chamor sonachar rovetz tachas masao vechadal ta meazovlo. Right, when you see your friend's chamor going through and having trouble, and you should have a vechadal ta meazovlo. The Torah says, and you should hold back from leaving it. Rashi comments that that's supposed to be read as a question. V'chadalta me'azovlo, are you going to think about leaving it? So Michal Feinstein noted that the only time that the Torah mentions approaching a human with a rhetorical question instead of a command, why is that the case over here? Why is this the one time the Torah does that? And why does Rashi highlight that? The reason, says Rav Michal Zatzal, is obvious. The Torah couldn't understand how a human being could see somebody else who needs assistance and not provide it. Even if you're commanded to dislike somebody, you're still obligated to see a Salam Elohim and to look to him to reduce that burden fully, even through the process of the Kiyum, of the fulfillment of the responsibility to think and to perhaps even, God forbid, hate the individual. Torah tells us that towards the end of the Pasha, we find the famous acceptance of the Torah by Bnei Yisrael. And the people say, Kol advarim asher diber Hashem na'aseh v'nishma, right? Whatever Hashem said, we will do and we will hear. And the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Peches Amar Alef notes that when Bnei Yisrael put na'aseh before nishma, 600,000 angels came down and tied two crowns to the heads of each of the members of Kal Yisrael, one for na'aseh, one for nishma. Rav Neria Zatzal explains that this was a result of their realization that in the same way it's impossible to stare at Hashem, it's also impossible to fully get its mitzvahs. This doesn't mean that one is exempt from them. There's value to performing the mitzvahs, but getting more involved with the mitzvahs by performing them allows one to be able to fully grasp them on a deeper level. And that's the intent of saying Nasa before Nishma. By doing one, is able to get around the ideas and concepts in it and become able to fully grasp the intent on a different level. Nasa v'nishma. You have a responsibility to do it, and when you do it, you're going to become even more aware of why you are doing it, and you will come to appreciate it even deeper. Finally, at the end of the parsha, we're told by Moshe Bahar, Arbaim Yom, Arbaim Laila, that Moshe was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, to which the Gemara in Menachos on Daf Tzadi Tes Amid Beis compares the gestation period of a child to Matan Torah, just as one is given in 40 days, the other is generated in 40 days, teaching us that what? That one who keeps the Torah protects his or her neshama. Why the comparison? Sir Velius Svei Zatzal explained that each time Moshe went up to the mountain, he went for a period of Arboim Yom. In order to acquire Torah properly, says Rav Elias Vey, one needs to do so with that chiddush of spirit. And that chiddush of spirit, that newness of spirit, takes 40 days to develop. Finally, the Haftorah, which is only read in leap years almost. The Haftorah tells us in Yirmiyahu, Anochi karasi brises avoseichem biyom hotzio sameretz mitzrayim beis avadim. I made a covenant with your forefathers on the day I took them out of Mitzrayim, and that's the day I made that covenant for Shiluach Avadim. Why is it so important to teach the lesson of Shiluach Avadim, of setting the slaves free at the moment of Mamad Har Sinai? Why is this so critical? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz Zatzal suggests that it's hard to let something or someone go away for nothing. However, at the moment that somebody realizes what freedom means because it affected him or her on a personal level, he or she is more inclined to share that experience with others in a similar predicament. And hence, it was at that moment of freedom that Hashem taught the lesson of Shiluach Avadim, of sending the slaves free, to highlight the point of appreciating and sharing the freedom. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bring us to freedom from this galus, and may we experience speedily in our days a Shabbat Shalom to all.